Good morning, Francis Hunt.
Good morning. Is that the Zacharias Meir?
It could be, yes.
I like that. You know, Zacharias has a kind of biblical authority to it.
Well, it's one that you've added because the nickname is Zach, and the real name has nothing to do with Zach. But it's you know, it all adds to the colour.
So don't keep us in suspense. What is your real name?
Saqib.
Saqib.
Yes.
Saqib, and how would one spell that?
Saqib with no U.
Saqib. Saqib. Ah, Saqib.
Yes, but is it sort of normally in the old days before I had that when I actually had that name, it took so long to sort of explain to people who I am and what I, you know, what was going on, and that it was just, you know, Zach became the easy way forward.
Make it dumb for those simple-minded Westerners.
You know, used to be a broker, and you're phoning up the market and say, can I buy 30,000 ICI shares? I say, who's that? Saqib. What? And like, the market's closed by the time, you know.
You had to have a little cultural discourse explaining that.
Yeah, it was just like that. So, in fact, and actually, I would say the feng shui of Zach Meir, if there is such a concept, because there is that sort of thing about, you know, what's in a name, you know, like Winston Churchill or whatever it is. Is actually just because it's easier. It's, you know, it's my life changed.
Your life changed. It became easier, and things began to flow. The feng shui of a name. I like that.
It was like, you know, it was like my it's like a, you know, the nom de plume. You know, you're writing as a journalist. It's just much. It was just. It's much easier. It's much quicker. Also, same thing with the email address, and there's, you know, the.
It has a kind of punchy verve to it, doesn't it, Zach? It's snappy and to the point.
A bit like me. It's a bit like me, but a punchy verb.
That's right. That's right. Now, talk to me about the USD JPY's punchy verve.
Well, yeah, I think that it's, I suppose, we've got this half breakdown this week. You know, from 110 to 108 was the worst, or 107.69 or 70 or whatever it was. But it's sort of, I mean, for me, it really should have gone from 110 to 105 in the blink of an eye. So we've got this sort of half breakdown, which I think is probably the market just really expecting the Bank of Japan to intervene.
I've just pulled it up for us now. So we closed on 108.013. This is the hourly we're showing here, Zach, and it captures most of March, back from the 15th to almost about a month in review. It's pretty ugly old spill, isn't it? And as you know, I'll claim a continuation call on that. With the sort of 112, if we just look at the daily, it's kind of the 112 was the midpoint of this setup, and it was trying to hold on to that level. You see, it's classic case of pegging, and for those that don't know what pegging is, it's the option strategies which are all set around, so this is the derivative markets once again, all set around key round numbers, because we spilled from 117.5, but first we had the Bank of Japan negative rate spike, and then we went all the way down to 112.5, and we've been setting up, and now where will we settle down? It looks like 107.
The point there is that I don't actually know why it didn't go down the same way it went up on the left of the chart. For me, it should have just gone from 120 to 110 in one move. And even, I mean, I suppose now it's resumed that from the mid-move consolidation. But obviously, that sort of 110 to 114 mid-move thing was really the rebound in the stock markets from mid-February. And obviously, the normal rate relationship is dollar yen down, stock markets down. But we haven't had that. What I want to see now is really, you know, who blinks first. Can the stock markets keep going up and dollar yen keep going down?
The interesting thing is, I've always respected the yen as a good currency, and I've always been in the headwinds of people like Kyle Bass. I think, and I got the feeling, the entire system wanted the yen to lose value and was very supportive of the devaluation process. Abe came in after the earthquake, and that's why we had the melt-ups. It was well flagged. He had a three arrows policy.
And George Soros got on the back of it as well. I think he bought, you know, let's say he bought around 80 yen, and took it up to 100 or whatever it was. So, I mean,
it seemed a very internally and well flagged to the insider move and plan, so that when it occurred, it had the support of the system for it to happen. I'm not so sure that this is a welcome event anymore, because of the tag that it has as the fear index, that it's now going the other way. So once again, at the risk of saying, is there some things the system prefer to support, and there's some things they prefer didn't happen, like, for example, a major gold bull run reasserting at a time like now would not be a positive thing, while keeping it where it is and even taking it off a bit might be deemed positive. What is your view? Does the system want yen strength, or did it prefer the narrative? Because I had some people saying 300 yen, you know, this is the trade of a lifetime. I've heard commentators, people, big names. And as I say, everyone talks about the Japan debt levels, and I just say, well, it's all internalized and their citizens save. Compare it to America that relies on foreign buyers of their debt. And I prefer the yen. Where am I wrong?
Yeah. I mean, I think this the whole thing is really from, you know, I've been looking at this across, you know, at least since sort of, you know, early 90s, and this whole thing is, you know, it's smelly. It doesn't make it that the last move down for dollar yen should have really hit the equity markets hard, and at least the FTSE, like, you know, back down below 6,000.
So if I just keep everyone involved that does have the benefit of a visual of this, we're talking about the 75 levels period in 2011.
Yeah.
Now, you see, the very interesting thing about 2011 as a year for me is that it's a very unknown year to most people in significance. Everyone's all about 07, 08, etc. But it was the top of all the major commodity markets, and it turned out the bottom of the yen USD. So you can see the dollar being the common suspect in this narrative here, because we had oil topping out twice, it double topped at the 130s. We had gold at 147, I think it was, and we had silver just sub $50, all happening. We had copper, which was the massive, massive red flag for the China narrative. Since then, we've been in a contained descent in China that then got disorderly more recently, which was the call for 2016. So what's your point on this bottom? Isn't it interesting that the USD-JPY low coincided with this, and this is, they've required it, you know, the system required Abe to come in here and give the dollar a rally against this currency?
Well, I think I actually bought dollar yen. This is like the last real FX trade I did, you know, sort of longer term one, and it was, I don't know, 78, 79 yen, and I took it to 86, thinking I'd done very well. Obviously, that was very foolish to get out at that point.
Well, it's always
but,
you know,
it was that obvious that even somebody who doesn't normally hold, I held over 6 weeks. I don't normally hold anything more than six hours. So it really was I was really keen. And I was really, then I was really happy that I that was the trade that Soros did as well. And he made $1 billion on that trade. Obviously, I made a little bit less, but, you know, I don't need that
marginally
much.
Marginally less. Zach of name and Zach of time frame.
But what I'm saying, it was a really, really spotlight trade, a really spotlight thing to do. You know, you open your FT on Saturday, you see that, you know, Abe is coming in, and this is just so obvious. Let's go for it. And he was built up as being the new messiah. As well, so that even after 25 years of the Japanese completely, you know, screwing up their whole zombie economy.
I want to challenge you on that. You see, look at this monthly chart. Everybody says, oh, it was such a zombie economy and all of that. Well, actually, and I've got people on YouTube challenging me on this one point, and this is a really interesting point. And the thing I believe is, if we keep repeating something often enough, other people repeat it without giving it any critical thought. Why was it so zombie for them? Because they had no inflation. Look at this currency pair. Essentially, the yen is long run in a major appreciation cycle against the dollar, and it had a period where it created a continuation pattern and broke down and should have gone further. Believe it or not, I've got YouTube clips out there with an inverted HVF calling for 30 on the yen. And then we had the earthquake, and it broke, and it was running brilliantly. This was from 115, we called it. Went down to 75, and then suddenly the brakes were put on. New post-earthquake, new PM, currency destruction, and we got this rally back up into this macro funnel zone that I have from this large continuation pattern. If your currency buys more for you every time you go away on holiday and your inflation is real low, apart from the fact that you had some banks that needed to detox, which we all have right now, in truth, why is it so zombie? Why is everyone dying out on knocking Japan? Your property values have dipped, obviously, post the event, but your currency has grown against everybody else. So if you take a global macro, if you'd had a home in London and a home in Tokyo, the yen value of your property has done marvels on the GBP JPY alone. So, I mean, it's not. Why is it so bad? I don't get why it was so bad. There, when they had an over-leveraged market, their stock market was allowed to fall. There was no plunge protection. They were at 39,000. They ended up at 6,000. We're setting new highs. We're going to be getting close to new highs soon if we run that shoulder on the U.S. indices in an environment that more people are on food stamps than have ever, ever, ever been. And the male participation rate in the economy is worse than the Depression 30s.
Well, I mean, it's what you're saying is I would agree with a lot of what you're saying. But the problem is that the underlying policy of having this near zero interest rates creates low growth. It creates massive distortions in pricing and wealth. And I suppose...
But the difference is they aren't speculating with that. It isn't all going into their stock market. They are savers and they're refusing to spend. So you have a nation of savers that are aging, that are refusing to spend, and you're telling me that's worse than a nation of major spenders that have a negative savings rate and everything gets thrown in a speculative bubble into property and a stock market in the US. I choose the Japanese zombie if that's what a zombie is being, because, you know, it just seems more...
Well, I suppose with that, you prefer a rich zombie than a poor one.
Exactly, a busted one.
But I think it's a very weird society that you got there, and I don't think that would be an acceptable way of life going on in the Western world. It's basically, Japan is such a closed society anyway, and you know I don't think it's going to be sustainable.
You don't
either.
Get property. You don't get general growth in countries with decreasing population, and Japan has a decreasing or a negative growth rate of population. The next areas that'll give us big growth, just like we've had China because of numbers and all the people coming from rural to city, will be Indonesia. They're the ones where the average age is about 26 or whatever the case may be, and that's mainly young, and there's going to be a substantial amount of growth if you just go by population demographics, and there's a few others. In other words, the average age. So Japan's growth days are over, but you know, so what? If you grow 1% and you have 0.2% inflation, You're going marginally forward. You're still making fabulous Toyotas that people want to buy more than Fords. You're selling Sony products that people choose over American products, etc., etc. And the old people don't need their money, the economy, to be growing particularly much. They've saved up a fortune. They just need their currency not to devalue. They're moderate spenders, and everybody calls them a zombie economy. And
I think America's cool. The other term to express the zombie economy is getting rid of boom bust, and that was something that that is a great plus of the Japanese model.
Yeah, they haven't got a very good point. Post their epic bust, they didn't create a whole bunch of ripple echo bubbles to
boom bust the 5 to 7 year old boom 7 year boom bust. Cycle, which is the normal thing in the Western growth, boom bust. You know, sort of you have 2 to 3% growth or 3 to 4% growth in the good times, and then you go into recession, and then it just keeps going on and on like that. Rather than that, +3 to 0 or -1 or -2, you have a +1 permanently.
Yeah, I think it sounds like stability. I think we're trained. I think personally, mentally, we're trained to believe inflation or a certain moderation amount of inflation is good. We get it repeated and told to us so many times. I think, why? Because politicians need the bracket keep on your tax take so that they can be seen to be giving tax cuts every 4 or 5 years as everybody keeps drifting. Remember the 40% tax, at the super tax bracket that I think it was Thatcher introduced, was only scooped a handful of people of mega wealth. Now you have, you know, mid-career policemen and nurses paying 40%. So, it's lovely inflation. It's a dragnet for ever creeping and squeezing the populace harder. If you have no inflation, you can't. You have to introduce new taxes, and that's incredibly unpopular politically. Well,
that's obviously where we are now, because we have the problem that in a low inflation environment, you know, a 40% tax rate or 20-30%, whatever it is very, very painful indeed. Because it normally
you to your favorite subject, the Panama Papers, it's the middle class that pay all the tax, and they squeaked out. We're being hollowed out on that Gini curve. All the money is being pushed to the extreme wealth, who've all got offshore funds and are not paying the tax. So as you hollow out the real burden carriers of the tax basis, your revenue drops. So then you get forced to increase taxes, which just kills growth even more and takes away the incentive, and you end up in the spiral. That's not what's going on in Japan. It's what's going on over here. We're the zombies, in my view. This is the zombie economy. And Abe has had pressure put on him to play the game and do currency destruction and all the other things. I'd love to know what the yen would really need to be. It should be left. Should have been left alone at 75, and for all we know, could be down at 45 now. As crazy as that.
That's the other thing. We're in this sort of intervention age, and government. Every government can cure everything, and I just, you know, it's a part of the nanny state thing that there is, and you know, being seen to do things, that's the other massive problem.
Is the socialism on the silent creeping in here? You know,
yeah, but we have
all controlled, managed the world finance.
But the real horror was, I mean, the start of that era was 2007, 2008, where you had, you had the governments coming in to save banks to give us zero interest rates, and for me, it's a horror because I'm not a socialist. But I think it was a horror even for people who are socialists, because I think the way that the rich have got richer, and you know, the mega rich has been astounding. I mean, it's just been absolutely incredible. And obviously then those super rich people who've got even, you know, got more rich out of the aftermath of the financial crisis than have their money in Panama, the British Virgin Islands and everything else. And there's just this such a an incredible difference between, you know, the rich and poor now. It is mind-boggling, and it can't be, and it's not, and it can't be healthy. I mean, I wouldn't mind that, because, you know, if you make money, if you're, you know, you're clever enough to make money, that's fine, you're successful, you're talented. But I think a lot of the geopolitical problems we have now is envy based, and that, you know, whether it's religious or whether it's political or whatever it is envy based, and that is going to make the world very, very unsafe. So it's great, these people making lots of money, but you do have that envy situation. And, you know, this Panama Papers is basically journalists envious of rich people.
Yes, there is an element of that, but I'll counter that with a lovely story I had from a gentleman whose passion is small and medium enterprises and supporting them. And he said he was walking down one of these exotic, let's just say Marbella, but it wasn't, but it was the equivalent of, looking at all the fancy boats. And he was talking to somebody who was local about who was the various owners of this. And here's someone who looks for entrepreneurship and people that create value to create wealth. And he said the entire experience was very disappointing, because just about every major boat owner was a family member of somebody who was involved in an arms deal or government procurement and was getting massive backhanders by facilitating the large flow of money from taxpayer stroke government based into either a military or pharmaceutical bulk purchasing. And there was no, he says, I wish there were more Elon Musk's people that were taking us off maybe combustion engines and smoking out the planet, if you're into the green argument, and actually delivering products that people want to buy. And he found that the bulk were insider go-betweens and deal brokers and makers, usually between chronically big money and state. And he says, where's the value creation in that? It's a bung culture. So when you hear the Panama Papers, where did Blair's millions all of a sudden come from? He's a trader. He has five Bloomberg screens. Really? How long has he been doing that? You and I know it ain't easy.
You're right.
JP Morgan, million, you know, a million a year. For what? For what? For carrying his name? Is that his payback for dropping us into Iraq and backing Bush? Smells stinky. He'll have a boat out there in Marbella too one of these days, and it'll be called, what was the little witch's name? The lawyer wife. Can't even remember her name. But anyway, I'm going
probably better not
mean.
To.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my skepticism coming through. Tell us what your take is for the yen and the follow-through, the potential here.
Well,
is it more downside?
I think that, well, obviously we're looking at, you know, the chart is a major, hints at a major break to the downside. The only spoiler is obviously how much, or, you know, when or if Bank of Japan intervenes, and that keeps you fearful, and that obviously stops you filling your boots as far as buying the yen is concerned. But that it makes it very, very.
But aren't they relying on that? I remember my Euro Swiss franc short. I continually had to bite my bottom lip every time the Swiss National Bank threatened to intervene, even though they were already on the quiet, clearly from the technical charts, intervening and holding levels, because everybody went, oh, they're going to intervene, and they spike, not realizing that they already were doing a reasonable amount of what they might refer as liquidity providing to the pair.
No, I think that's already going
sometimes on. Sometimes you just got to take the trade.
I know dollar yen well enough to see that the bounces there are, you know, they are dodgy bounces, let's say.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, the price action over Thursday, Friday was not normal price action. It was, you know, it was one minute it's 108.20, then it's 108.60. It's, you know, it's skewing in that, you know, they're trying to skew in that direction. It's being fiddled. And that's the problem. The good point about technical analysis is that it can factor in and neutralize fiddled markets, because you're just basically following, you know, what the chart sees, rather than the bad action or the false action is included in the chart that you're seeing. But these markets are so fiddled now, and they really have been since, well, I suppose the start of the year. That whole rebound on stocks was completely false.
Wow, rebound on stocks. Can I jump in on there and show you that screen? Have a look on your screen, and for those that are doing more than just the pod, it'll be on YouTube as well. This chart, the Fed, this was their balance sheet, 58.7 billion, smash, sub 40, all occurring early part of 2016. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it explains why, if you look at the S&P, the NASDAQ and the Dow, why I think it was the 11th, 12th, whatever it was, of February, all of them have that unfilled gap to the upside. Gaps are the best, I think for me they're the best indicator of the market being totally wrong-footed and also of something dodgy going on. And to have a gap on a major market, the S&P index, a gap which remains unfilled, is incredible. It shows that somebody just went in there and...
it's the whole bid stack being taken out.
Yeah.
Right the way through. In other words, it's such a huge and vast sum. It's what I call not-for-profit trading.
We can think about how, you know, the S&P, I mean, how liquid is that market? How is it possible for it to have any untraded area? You know, it is absolutely incredible. And, you know, and it's sitting there, that this has a unfilled gap to the upside mid-February, showing the market was caught off guard totally, and clever people caught off guard, not just anybody. I mean, that was an off-guard moment from an unforeseen event, like a meteorite hitting the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, since that, it was almost like an overwhelming force being thrown that then tamed all the shorters was a lesson. It was almost like a big lion
and it
smashing
would have been
one of the cubs with a huge paw so hard that he rolled 10 times and doesn't continue with the previous deemed naughty behavior, like selling.
It was the it was basically the last bullet that hit Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the one from the front.
the one from the front.
The one that took off, you know, half his head. That it was that.
The Bill Hicks moment.
There were a few little
back
pellets.
And to the left. The head went back.
Yeah, exactly. But it was he had the one in the neck, and you know whatever it was, and there were a few, you know, bouncing around in the car. But there was that sort of dumb bullet which hit him there, and that was it. And actually, I have to say that to get back, just to mention the Panama Papers, I think that one, that revelation is actually the equivalent of somebody saying, of the, you know, the CIA saying, actually, no, it was a conspiracy, or NASA saying, you know, we didn't actually go to the moon. I mean, I think the Panama Papers will turn out to be as significant as that.
Well, of course, it's proven that a chap won a civil case on the Kennedy aspect, and so did they with the King family on Martin Luther King. So, you know, people have to just realize that the intelligence services are assassins.
It's a horrible thought. What a horrible thought.
Well, it's absolutely. And even Piers Morgan said it once when that was on something that I haven't made my mind up on, but that was regarding a whole series done on the whole Diana thing. And he said, of course they kill people, and the notion that they don't. But anyway, moving on to a better subject. What's going to happen? A couple minutes. What's your big key moment that you're going to be looking at for us in the week ahead?
Well, I think that let's put it this way, what is worth looking out for is to see whether the, you know, whether the tail is wagging the dog or the other way around. Dolly yen goes down below 105. I cannot believe that the equity indices will still be, you know, as strong as oxes as they are now. That would just be unbelievable. I can't believe it will not start to take its toll on equities. And if it doesn't, if you still have the Dow above 17,500 with the yen sub 105, I would eat my hat. And I would actually write to people and say, you know, you're having a laugh here.
So the key thing is, it is yen strength. It's not just the dollar. It's not dollar weakness for everyone who's listening, because the euro yen is equally ugly looking. Where would we? So if we just put the yen as an outlier, that's going to be a boss at the moment, Zach. Where would we put the euro and the USD? Maybe if we looked at the big euro USD between them, the rest of the pack. Who's going to be the weak and who's going to be the next strongest if we just put yen as an outlier?
Well, I suppose the euro is there by a mile, and the euro
as weak to the dollar as strong to the
strong,
dollar.
Strong.
Okay, and for how long do you think that's going to go on?
Well, I think the euro, the ECB. I mean, Draghi, he hasn't got anything left. He's delivered his final bazooka. You saw him at the end of last week. They're trying to talk the cross down. It went from 114.50 to 113.50 in a sort of blink of an eye. So we're getting to that sort of panic zone. I think there's a big problem here. I mean, the Japanese have got nothing left apart from then, you know, making it minus 0.5% or minus 1% on the
tinkering,
interest rate. The ECB are out of ammo as well. You've got the US elections, which are so wide open. Only a nutcase would go to the dollar in the run-up to that anyway. It could literally be anyone who wins that election.
I don't believe that. I believe it was preordained to be HRC, Her Royal Highness Clinton.
That's fine. But at the same, the run-up to that means that you can bet on the dollar, but it's a very ropey thing to bet on. The equity indices are already absolutely at the top, at the record level. Again, you're going to be chasing the down, the S&P, to record highs in the run-up to the presidential presidential election. I think that's a brave call.
No, I wouldn't do that. This is my take. My take is the problem is the dollar has been too weak, And the reason the dollar's needed to be weak is to keep the indices pumped up following the start to the year. So I think they're going to be forced to, because the Japanese have sighed. They're quite resigned to this. I don't get the feeling they've really wanted it as a populace, this currency destruction thing. I think they've seen it all before. They've tried it all before. And they throw in their hands up in the air and saying, look, you know, we've done what we can do with this. We haven't got too much more to do. That means the yen could continue to be strong for a while. I think the dollar has to stand up at some point and start showing some strength, which will affect the indices at that point. So I think the Euro-USD, while there might be short-term upside for the Euro-USD, it needs to roll over and the dollar strength needs to come showing. But I think we were talking about this last time. But very, very interesting. And the final word, what about you finish on the Panama Papers? Is this the end of it all, or does it just blow over and we carry on as usual and the middle class gets squeezed and nobody... I mean, I want to pay what Tony Blair pays in tax, you know?
I think it's a watershed moment. If there's nothing illegal about it, then why isn't there just a link on the HMRC webpage saying, if you want to pay tax, you know, fill in this form. If you don't want to pay tax, here's the link to Panama. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, the hurdle is being able to afford the consultants so that it's a sufficient, and to have sufficient income that affording the consultants to do the dodge and to run the offshore companies for you, you need to have a certain scale of income.
I think there'll be the demand for it. I think the market forces will make it so that, you know, in fact, I think that would be a good business for, you know, Hunt and Mir to set up a company where you can cheaply. In fact, it'd be a no, you know, our fees.
The money supermarkets of offshoredom.
Exactly. Our fee is actually just a percentage of the amount of money you want to take. You want to deposit offshore.
Yeah.
So there's no upfront fee.
We could do a low-cost entry. That we could become the easy jet of offshoring.
I would say we would make millions, but obviously,
well, the biggest cost is going to be paying the politicians not to close us down and to find fault with what we do. I've realized lobbying is where the action is, Zacharias.
Right.
Or what was the full name again? Run it past me. Sarkip. On that great
exactly.
note.
Hence the Zach.
You see, you just proved your point. Zach, thank you very much. It's
thank you,
more than 20 minutes. Have a smashing weekend. I look forward to catching up with you in the new week. And for our followers, make sure you follow at Zach Mir, at ZAKMIR. And give him a few tweet outs. You can also find him on City AM. And we'll be catching up with the events of the week in the early half of next week. We'll probably make it. Is that a Tuesday we on, Zach? Or a Wednesday?
That sounds good. Depends what's going on. You know, obviously, you know, every day brings a new adventure in the markets.
Absolutely. So you'll always get us twice a week at minimum. Until then, Zach, have a good weekend.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.